This is GeekSpeak, a technology show about society. Today's show title is Facebook Isn't Neutral About Pokemon Nazis. On today's show...
Does Facebook help or hinder? Is net neutrality dead? Just how dangerous is Pokemon?
We discuss these questions and more on this episode of GeekSpeak. This is GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell, and welcome. In the air with me is Miles Elam. He's a programmer and a pedant and a political junkie. Hi, Miles.
How's it going?
Good. We actually do have a bit of political stuff to talk about today in tech.
Indeed, we do.
But let's first talk about Facebook. And we've been talking a bit about advertising.
Because that won't be political.
Advertising and Facebook and their ability to focus ads, and they've been using it. People have been using it in legal fashion for a while.
Yes, months ago or a year ago, we talked about how Facebook was allowing people to post ads for housing and basically excluding certain groups like African Americans or people in the LGBT community. Facebook promised at the time, "Hey, we're going to fix this." It's been a year. It's still not fixed. The news outlet ProPublica decided to give it a shot and create some targeted housing ads that would be for whites only.
And they went through?
Yeah, we're basically all allowed. That there was no real, there was no substantive change. Every single ad was approved within minutes.
It's kind of a sad state of affairs because we were assured they were going to be on top of this and work on it. I mean, basically, we've covered this before, of course, but we're basically talking that it's illegal to exclude people for renting or other services in the society based off of race, sexual...
Fair Housing Act passed in the late 60s and early 70s. Or rather, the Fair Housing Act was passed in the 60s, but there have been other similar measures at the state and local levels.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just, oh, and oops. It's like, this is actually violating the law.
Yeah.
And it's been going on for a year now without being fixed.
Is ProPublica just relieving it? No one's suing them yet? Because it seems to me it's a pretty major issue that they need to address.
I am unaware of anyone actually suing them yet, but the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, which is responsible for enforcing fair housing laws, told us that it closed an inquiry into Facebook's advertising policies, which is not entirely... to be unexpected, because Ben Carson, the HUD secretary, is not exactly amenable to fixing
regulations of
like
this
that.
Sort. It's funny though, because it seems like Facebook, you know, the way the general zeitgeist of the company is that they'd want to address this inequity, even without being sued. You'd think that.
What
they
do you mean
would,
the general zeitgeist of the company?
I know people that work there. I mean, you know, just from the general perspective
yes,
of Silicon
know.
Valley and. I would assume a desire to benefit people, not just make money. And of course, it's a balancing board there, right?
But there's a thing though, is that there are several people, or not say several. There are many people, including people that we know that are that have similar political proclivities that we do, and have certain ethics that guide their decisions. But there are a lot of people in the tech industry at Facebook, at
sure.
Google, at others that are. How to put this politely, are of a more fascistic bent.
Yeah, I get that.
I would have considered that a fairly strong terminology and kind of hyperbolic, but I really don't anymore.
Explain it then.
The alt-right and neo-Nazis are in force, and so even the folks that say, like, I'm not a Nazi, why are you going just throwing that term around? You ask them what their views are, and they are surprisingly similar to white supremacists. Don't interfere, and if someone wants to be racist, just let them. And it's the free marketplace of ideas, even though it's an ideology that has led to tremendous sorrow.
Well, it's why we have the Equal Housing Act, right? That's why the Housing Act exists, because it needed to be addressed.
It's also the reason why Germany has outlawed the Nazi Party and
right.
and. Symbols therein.
Okay, so, but don't you agree with me that at some level, the outside perspective of what Facebook is attempting to do and works is at some level trying to be beneficial to society?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I think the reason why Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook was not altruistic in that way. And I don't believe that any large company is moral on its own. Like, mm-hmm. it, as a company, as a profit generating publicly traded company, I don't believe that that appellation of morality or ethics really applies.
It's so not Facebook was being researched by the enforcement agency that deals with housing and equity,
housing and urban development,
yeah. And then that they put it down. Then Facebook's like, oh, well, we're free and clear. No more necessary to do.
Well, that's when they were contacted again by ProPublica this time, saying, yeah. "Did you do anything about this?" And so the ball is still in Facebook's court to say, like, did you do anything about this? Because algorithmically, you'd think that this is not that hard, because you're saying...
I mean, you're basically labeling it as, this is a housing thing, and I want to target audience based off of gender or race or whatever. Right there, it seems like you just make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and...
And of course, there's going to be edge cases where you'll be able to do things that seem a little strange, like, you know, I don't know, advertise to hockey players only or something, and, you know, maybe a higher percentage of hockey players are white or something like that, where it's a little more tricky to detect it, but still, you'd think you'd be able to detect it. In fact, you could just say... You could just do a thing where if you're advertising, if Facebook has an advertising for a housing thing or something that's covered by these kind of laws, mm-hmm. they would just make sure to only deliver the ad equitably among a lot of people, just not be able to have filtering. And be like, nope, sorry, this happens. Or maybe, you know, I don't want to pay for that many ads. Where you go, that's fine, you don't have to pay that many ads, but we're gonna run this many ads to make sure it's balanced. Even if you know, aren't paying for it. There's ways of them handling it, obviously. So I hope ProPublica puts them on the fire there and they resolve this. Speaking of Facebook, the news around this week was a bit about Facebook moving forward with an intention of helping people that have depression and stopping them from suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they're doing this, and basically one of the IT execs posted about this, basically Facebook is expanding its artificial intelligence analysis tools to try to detect, and I'll just read the quote from Guy Rosen, a VP of product management. "We are starting to roll out artificial intelligence outside the U.S. to help identify when someone might be expressing thoughts of suicide, including on Facebook Live. This will eventually be available worldwide, except the EU. Which has tougher rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And that's by Guy Rosen, and he has a whole statement about this. And there's a post on this post with some screenshots and stuff. The person's name, we've reached, it's just a big heart with a question mark in it, and then some text. "Maura, we've reached out to offer help. Someone thinks you might need extra support right now and asked us to help you." And there's a cancel button and a see resources button. Mm-hmm. It's on an Android device. I mean, the basic idea is, if people are committing suicide and there's a way to detect that algorithmically,
mm-hmm.
it would be unethical not to act on it at some level. That's my starting foray into this conversation.
In and of itself, sure, I'd agree with you. I don't know what the unintended consequences of it might be, because that data that they have, like, what happens if you have false positives? What's that effect? What happens if you have false negatives? Is there liability? Like, what's the... There's a lot more information that needs to happen before I would commit to it. But,
a good solution of doing anything, but if you could detect it, it seems
right,
like...
Right, but in theory, forward. It seems like a great use of AI.
So Facebook has actually some staff on hand that is... that's actually works on suicide prevention. And this AI is actually going to flag the posts and the user's information to the staff members, which will then review it by human eye, mm-hmm. and then determine whether to contact them or not. So this is a, you know, artificial intelligence analyzing human interaction or a sentiment and then connecting two people together. Seems like a pretty good way to do it at some level. There are, of course, privacy concerns and false positives, as you said. And it's interesting because this kind of raises a red flag for me, because there's this, especially you see it in children. Anytime someone says, oh, you know, think of the safety of the children, you can do a lot of harm by moving in that direction, by saying, well, look at the risk that could occur, and therefore we should do this. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things that kind of fits in that space where, yeah, it does make sense if you know that someone's in danger, that we should, you know, reach out, try to help. But when you use that as the blanket, this is why we're doing this analysis thing, and then you use that analysis in other forms, there's a problem. Like, it can lead to a bad situation.
Right. The reason why it isn't available in the EU is privacy laws.
Mm-hmm.
And my ears kind of perked up when it said it's not available in the EU because it is this intrusive thing that violates your privacy, but being used for a good cause. And that's this weird... That's why I'm hedging my compliments of the efforts.
Well, they're also rolling this out not inside the U.S., outside the U.S., and not EU, right? And they're probably not hitting the U.S. market right off the bat because it's easier for them to try it in other markets first. But, I mean... Okay, a couple things. If Facebook has an algorithm that can analyze whether you have depression or not, and whether you're having, mm-hmm. you know, there might be a risk for you, then of course they can look at that in the rears and see your information in the rears and know whether you've done that or not before.
Mm-hmm.
What's not for them? Why wouldn't they do that before hiring people? Right? Pretty much everybody is on Facebook, right? So they could analyze before they hire an employee. Why wouldn't they, right? They have access to the data. And then there's other questions of, well, let's say, and this is just a shot in the dark. My wife and I were talking about this earlier, and Maggie was saying that, what about insurance companies getting access to this information, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your rates changing. And I was saying, well, actually, I don't know if suicide is actually covered by insurance companies. That, you know, when you actually have a death, when you have that sometimes is not covered by policies for the family. But more than that, you could definitely see them raising rates because you're potentially going to be more hospitalized or the issues because of your psyche.
Yeah.
Now, right off the bat, that doesn't make sense that Facebook would do that, would sell that information. Of course, that's a totally different level of concern. But when you walk down this path for long periods of time, if everybody's used to Facebook being aware of your mental state, that becomes a norm. And, you know, Aunt Margie, her life was saved because Facebook intervened, and everybody knows that it was a good thing. Over a period of time, you could imagine those resources are now available. We know they're available. And so a person could say, I want this information shared with my insurance company for a decreased premium, because it's kind of like a safe driving record, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could start using this information in society at the behest of the person it's their information, right? But it does get into a space where more information is known about you algorithmically than you'd possibly want to be shared. Even with like your own doctor, potentially. What are your thoughts?
You pretty much covered them. I mean, I have nothing more really to contribute okay. There. Sorry.
Would you, I mean, you and I both sometimes have trouble with depression. I won't say mainly depression, but sadness and difficulty of that nature. Would you in any way be helped by Facebook coming on and saying, hey, you okay? Some employee at Facebook? I would find it a little off-putting.
No.
And I'd probably put up my barriers pretty quickly around that.
Probably, yeah. Marketing on this would be important, like how do you present that information, but yeah, it would, I don't know how I'd react to it.
The staff that's there is also potentially going to contact friends and family and or contact authorities if they feel an imminent problem exists. So this is going to be an intervention thing.
Yeah,
Facebook's going to test.
The thing is, I've known someone who killed himself and announced it on Facebook before they did so. And there's a part of me that goes, I really wish I had that guy back.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Wait, but? I mean, isn't that the end of the conversation? I mean, wouldn't you want that person
back? No,
it
really isn't.
Why?
Because my desire for him to have not killed himself is not necessarily a justification for Facebook's attempt to try to stop. Like, I think back, what would they have done to stop? And I don't think that in that case it would have done anything. It was too quick.
Hmm.
Maybe they would have seen the signs earlier, but at the same time, I don't think that he was in a place to... That's one of the things about severe depression,
mm-hmm.
is that at those times when you need help the most is are times often that you are least likely to be receptive to that help.
Right.
So,
So let me say, let's just say this. Like, let's say his post flagged information and the person saw this in enough time, staff member saw this enough time, called the authorities, police came, got him before he died, hospitalized him, and he got medical service. This seems like that would be your friend still being alive.
Because I know the circumstance of what happened, I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure that there would
that
be,
wouldn't been
there
the
would
case.
Been no time for that.
But yeah. In some situations, that could have been the case. I mean, I guess what are we?
I don't know enough about the thing. Is it may well have been that innocuous statements, just writing patterns that we all missed weeks or months ahead of time, would have been caught by this AI long yes. before the final message.
Yes,
I don't know.
But isn't that the question? I mean, first off, they're going to get better at this. They have a large data set.
Mm-hmm.
The AI is going to get better at it over time. And intervention from them will get better. So potentially these people's lives, friends' lives will be, family members' lives will be saved by this pattern. So at some level, it's kind of like, why wouldn't we do this? It's interesting that I didn't know about your friend passing away and announcing it on Facebook. I didn't know that that became the subject. I'm sorry that we're talking about this.
No, that's it was long enough ago that it was.
Yeah. So it seems to be that it would be like a no-brainer then from this perspective.
It's not, because in my 40s, I have had at least some experience, especially with the tech industry. And I am not immediately willing to jump on the thing because I have an emotional response to it. Because I think of the laws that have made because of, for example, child pornography, a universally hated construct and practice. But at the same time, many laws have been made with that in mind that have not done much of anything to stop that, but were used for other more intrusive mm-hmm. purposes.
That was kind of what I was referring to earlier by, you know, protect the children can lead to really bad rules.
So I think of the research that's been done with regard to the amount of time that people spend on Facebook and their mental state. And some of that is self-selecting because the folks that you're polling are on Facebook. But at the same time, being on Facebook doesn't necessarily make one happier.
Right.
So then to make an environment where you may end up with people not being made less happy. Let's say that research was correct. But then also putting in a latch to try to make sure you don't off yourself seems like it would be a very... It reminds me of a technological purgatory for your mind. Just never being great, but keeping you from being really bad.
So what you're saying is the algorithms that are in place are meant there to keep you on Facebook as much as possible. And however that's done, that's a win. And as long as you don't kill yourself, that's a win. And so the algorithms and the AI should just keep you to the state where you won't off yourself, but you'll stay on the service. That's the sweet spot for the company.
Because that's what a lot of the stuff is trying to make you feel dependent upon getting that feedback. And
right. The gamification aspects, the thing that's trick you into being engaged more.
Right.
Fascinating. And the emptiness potentially that produces over time that might lead to depression.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's really dark.
I mean, there is no financial incentive for Facebook to say, hey, I see you're getting kind of depressed. Why don't you spend a week off of Facebook and we'll take off your account for now and here's some resources you can talk to, or we're going to modify your feed so you're not seeing the things that our algorithm says that you would keep you on, but
that's interesting. That is one of those side effects of companies that make their revenue off of advertising. What they want is your attention only. It doesn't matter anything else. When you pay for a service, of course, if you're paying for the service and you're not using it, that's okay for the company, right? That might be a sign that you might cancel or something, but in general, it's not a bad thing. But if your only payment, if you will, is the eyeballs seeing the stuff,
you are the product.
You've got to get that people on there as much as possible. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, thanks for chatting with me about that. And I'm sorry to hear about your friend passing away and announcing on Facebook that it's really a creepy thing to think that that's the world we live in. And of course, there's been people that have killed themselves on live streams on Facebook as well. Mm-hmm. Whether they can do anything about this or not, it does seem like if they've got the data, they should. At the same time, I definitely am concerned from the privacy perspective. or even from the intervention. One other side effect that this may occur that might be beneficial is we definitely have a major taboo against mental illness in mm-hmm. this world. We don't talk about it the same as a broken arm, right? We completely mm-hmm. think about it as a different thing. And because of that, we don't even get the help we need because of, you know, when we have these kind of illnesses. Yeah.
And things are improving, but the tech industry is also this, we're using our brains to make a product. And so there is that double stigma of there is something wrong with your brain in a brain-oriented profession. So.
But I guess what I'm saying is if Facebook's able to save lives and help in this situation and realize better how people fall in these patterns and how common they are and start sharing some statistics about how common it is, potentially that knowledge could help lessen our stigma against talking about mental illness.
Sure.
Basically, finding out how depressed everybody actually is could benefit people knowing they're not alone.
Yeah.
Speaking of depressing, let's talk about FCC ruling this week. I'm sure people have heard about this. Effectively, the FCC chairman has decided to kill net neutrality.
He's led the charge, but yeah, there's two other. The FCC is made up of five people appointed by the president, or at least the incoming folks are. Mm-hmm. And because we're in a two-party system, the rules are that two of them have to, you know, it's evenly divided between those parties. So it's effectively, it's either going to be three Democrats or three Republicans, and then the remaining two slots go to the other major party, not much in the way of anyone else. But whoever comes into the White House determines who is in charge of the FCC. Mm-hmm. And as it stands right now, the GOP is in charge of the FCC, and the person who is the chairman of the FCC now, Ajit Pai, is quite hostile to the idea of net neutrality, which was so popular actually even just 2 years ago when it was first hitting the mainstream in terms of ideas and the reforms being made by his predecessor Wheeler.
I mean, the only cogent argument against net neutrality is that if you free up the market will potentially invest more, or something like that. That's
right.
Like
which is a fallacy that needs to be addressed. That notion of that you can have a free market without a government. Because it has never existed.
Right.
That construct has never existed. A market exists because the government, as a will of the population, has decided upon a certain set of rules. So when you have things like contract law and criminal law and things like that, these are all aspects of the government that you're working on. So when you say you want to deregulate or make it a free market, what you're saying is you want to decide which way the laws are from the government, not necessarily less government.
Right. But I mean, the argument to remove government here is to free up the market so that there's more investment and more growth. But setting aside whether you think that that's the end-all be-all of the measure of success of the FCC's role in regulating business or lack of regulating mm-hmm. business, whether their investment, you know, industry investment is the measure. Even if it were the measure, the problem is that the Securities and Exchange Commission filings reveal an increase in internet investment since 2015 when this took serious hold.
Yes.
So we've already
seen
major...
When net neutrality laws were enacted, yeah.
So there's still growth. It's
or
not like
rules,
stagnation.
I should say. It's not really a law. It's
rules, yeah. It's not really... So it's not that there's stagnation that we're trying to turn around, right? It's at some level, it seems to be functioning because we...
Power grab. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. It's a power grab by incumbents within that field and the donors. And
it's not the only thing that's going on here. The rollback of net neutrality is not the only thing. You also have a story about the poor being affected by this.
Right. And this is actually something similar, which is how do you treat the net? Is the internet something that is... just a general privilege, like going out to an In-N-Out burger, Or is it something that is fundamental to a functioning society like the telephone was and the telecom infrastructure that was laid out 100 years ago? So with that in mind, if you believe that it is something that is necessary to be a part of our society, a necessary communication tool, necessary for education, commerce, then you want to have more people on, as many people on there as possible. You want to have as few amount of people excluded as possible. But that is not how it works out with the current FCC. And
right. And for example, yeah. The Lifeline program, which lets people with lower incomes get monthly household subsidy of like $99, something like that, to get internet access.
It depends. Some it's more than that. But yeah, yeah, it's if you are at or near or at or below the poverty line, then you get some help to be online. That way, yeah, you're not just cut off.
And this makes sense, especially since more and more of our public schooling, it kind of requires you to have access to computers and internet access to actually do, public school.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make sense. And it looks like the FCC also, the 3-2 vote, which now you explained pretty well, they're scaling back the Lifeline support program.
Right, which is
taking potentially 70% of people. Yeah. To find new providers.
Assuming that they can, because the way things are set up, many people don't have a choice of provider.
No, it's you have some, one in some an crazy area, like 80% of the population has one provider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, 80%? That seems a bit high.
That's too high. I recall being more than 50, but I can't remember.
Yeah, it's a lot, though.
Yeah.
And when I think of, for example, my my father-in-law, he's in a rural area where he has a choice of really slow DSL because he's far away from the colo, and satellite, which is many times more expensive, while not
as good,
necessarily being better experience. So that's where a lot of people are at right now.
So one of the things that's so frustrating about these this time around is that it doesn't look like the argument against and people outcry will actually stop the repeal of neutrality.
Yeah, just the opposite, actually. This goes along with the Princeton studies that we're checking to see, how does the country, how do lawmakers react to public comment?
Mm-hmm.
And it was something really horrible, like if the top 1% wants something to be done, even if everyone else is almost universally against it, it's something like a 60% chance that it will pass.
Wow.
And if most people want something, but the 1% doesn't want a thing, it has a near 0% chance of passing. Whereas if the 1% doesn't care about it, or a big business doesn't care about something, and you have the majority of people want something, there's a 30% chance it'll pass. And if the majority don't want a thing, it's still a 30% chance. It's effectively zero effect of public comment. And the FCC is really showing that in stark relief, because you have a whole lot of people taking the time out to say, this is what we want. In fact, the last time this was discussed, 2 years ago, when the net neutrality rules were first being drafted, it was the highest response that the FCC had ever received at the time.
Right.
And overwhelmingly supportive of net neutrality laws. In this case, there's a whole lot of people that are saying, no, do not repeal this. And there were also a whole lot of obviously spam bits that were coming in and saying, we support repealing net neutrality. And people have gone back and seen, like, yeah, we're looking at this pattern here. They're obviously automated responses.
Right. There's like that. Analyst analyzing the speech patterns. At first, I was a little confused by that, because a lot of the times what the call to action is to go take an online form and slightly modify it so it's your own words, mm-hmm, and send it to your congressperson or send it to the FCC directly. And there is a bit of tricks there, because, of course, 22 million public comments have happened regarding after he made the statements, right? But a lot of that is what they call spam or form letters. Very hard to tell the difference between those things. If it's coming from a real person's address, if it's a copy of the same letter over and over again, you at some level that's less engaging. But analysis of those papers, of those submissions, found that the completely unique items, 98.5% of those unique ones support the current rules and are against the change. So even though there's a lot of other stuff that's hard to analyze.
And the thing is, I've filled out those ones where it was already a preformed letter. And the reason why I did it was like, hey, yeah, this says exactly what I want to say. In fact, it probably says it better than I could, and I agree with it. So that's what I'm going to send. That to completely dismiss that is one thing. But when you go back and see that they are just – it's just AstroTurf – that's when you go like, wait a second, this is...
So the one saving grace here is the form of the Constitution of the United States. And that is that there is another branch that will help step in and take a look at whether what the chairman's doing is legal. And that's actually the kind of meat and guts of an article posted a couple days ago by Tim Wu on... at the New York Times.
Now I'm actually curious as to which branch you're talking about.
The judiciary. So why the courts, the article title in New York Times is why the courts will have to save net neutrality. And I have not fully plowed through this article because we were just grabbing stuff right beforehand. But basically the FCC is not going to listen to us and we've got three more years. So things are going to get bad quickly. And that will probably mean this thing goes to the courts. I don't know the standing of what will, and of course it's still going to be a lot of time as well. I mean, the other thing that's going to happen though is once you get a telco doing what has been done before by actually taking advantage of the lack of net neutrality. I mean, keep in mind back in 2005, a small phone company based in Northern Carolina named Madison River. Have you heard about this? It's the actual kind of start, if you will, begin preventing its subscribers from making phone calls using the internet application Vonage. They stopped Vonage from working, even though it was just a IP phone. And that actually rolled into rules about net neutrality. Like that's where it started seeing that we needed this kind of regulation. So if these rules get reversed completely and we see AT&T do something like, oh, yeah, you can't spend more money if you want to get video at home or if you want to use Netflix versus YouTube or, if you have a Yahoo account, we don't have a relationship with Yahoo anymore. So you can't use Yahoo email at home without paying a little bit more money.
Right.
If we see something like that occur, there potentially would be a large outcry and a negative hit commercially for them. So that's the next stage, I would assume.
That's the thing, though. Negative hit commercially. We've already established that most people don't have a choice of their provider. And when they do, that choice is what? AT&T versus Comcast or Verizon?
In our area, yeah.
Yeah, that's – well, in our area, we also have CruiseIO, and they're actually wonderful.
Yeah, except that they use AT&T's DSL service and – right? They don't have their own cables. AT&T owns the cables.
Yeah. That's another hurdle, though. I mean, that would be if the FCC also takes out those provisions for ISPs.
Definitely. You could potentially try to find a small ISP that can have that kind of middle space and then buy the service through them and potentially get away with it. Also, we could start doing is using more VPN access and hiding what network you're actually using.
And it's funny, as I say all of this, it feels like hyperbole. It feels like tinfoil hat. And at the same time,
I don't see how it is. No, it's not.
Well,
I mean,
well, that's the thing, though. I'm thinking in terms of the person who's listening to this who may not be, day to day in this.
Yeah, no, I get that.
And
no, this is a serious problem.
Right. The counterexample is Portugal already did this.
And what happened?
Portugal got rid of net neutrality laws. Companies are free to say which traffic is allowable and which ones are not.
What happened?
It is it is like a caricature. It's like the cartoons that we posted 2 years ago about what would happen if Comcast, did not have net neutrality to hold them back. where and I'll post a link to this.
So basically, your connection to the internet is no longer connection to the internet. Your connection to the internet is connection through a telco that decides what you're going to see.
If you want messaging and it lists a certain set of apps, then you pay €5 a month. And if you want social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, then you're going to pay €5 a month with un mes gratis, you know. And, you know, video. If you want Netflix or YouTube, that's another.
And we're not talking about the amount of bandwidth. We're talking about the type of money they can charge you for things.
In addition to paying your Netflix subscription, you would also have to pay the ISP for the bandwidth you would use for that Netflix subscription.
But that's the thing. It's not even the bandwidth you're paying for. It's the privilege of that service specifically. So they can target Instagram, for example. Let's say you use Instagram. If you want to use Instagram from home, you're going to spend extra money because they don't want you to use Instagram. They want to use their photo sharing social network tool. So they're just going to charge more money for the competitors.
Right.
And we will see that, I would assume, because why wouldn't we? Except the only potential question is whether the telcos, the large telcos in the United States, are going to want to take the risk of being punched back again next mm-hmm. election cycle.
Something that is, I just want to mention one last thing about this advertisement page that's in Portuguese, is there are certain apps that are associated with the company Mayo that are free. Because affiliated with Mayo. And the overall result of this is if you have a close association with or owned by this company, then it's free and there's an automatic boost for it. If you are looking for something that's video, if you're an established player like Netflix, then they're going to pay this extra package to get it. If you have some idea and you want to make something new, there is a good chance that you are shut out.
Yeah.
That's the big deal,
definitely see a situation where a company like Comcast, who, you know, I don't have other internet access potential here. Mm-hmm. I could do DSL, but I'm actually a little farther away than I don't know if I can get DSL from here. But I've got Comcast, and Comcast gives me an email address. Mm-hmm. I don't use that email address because why would I? I use my personal mail server and I use my Gmail account and everything. But they could basically say, you know, you don't get email. This is your email account. This mm-hmm. is the one you use. You can't access Gmail without paying us extra money, right?
Yeah, they could do that. We're going to block 110 and 143 so that you can't get POP or IPv4. Yeah,
I mean, it's probably not what they'll do, but those kind of things are now available for them to do,
right?
If they feel like they can make money, and again, you know, if they feel like they can make money doing something of that nature, it behooves them to do so because if they're not, they're not doing what they should for their board.
Right. And this all rolls into that notion of you're not getting rid of regulation. You are making a regulation that benefits the incumbents.
Yeah.
It's still a regulation. It's just one that is against against the interests of most of the people that are being governed by it.
Well, we have a lot of stories about this what's going on here, and of course, we'll be much, you know, we'll keep you abreast of this as we do more shows. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me in the air room is Miles Elam. We're talking a bit about net neutrality and kind of the dauntingness about what's happening with it and how it's basically going away and what we'll see happen next. The only light I see at the end of the tunnel on this one is that this is such a shockingly unpopular thing to do. And people hate their telcos so much, like no one likes their telcos, that it seems like it's just a matter of time before they get slapped around. However, gerrymandering is real, and money controls whether you stay in office. And the big companies have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And the votes are not important because of gerrymandering, so this might be as bad as it sounds.
Yeah, when you have wealth inequality, when you have...
This sounds a little, you know, tinfoil hat to me at this
point.
Right.
Well, I mean, but let's take numbers, though. Let's say that you have Citizens United, which is a Supreme Court ruling that says that money is speech. So there's no limit on that and who it comes from, or effectively none. And then you also have income inequality, where the top have a lot more money than a good portion of the bottom. So let's say that.
And you know, when we say top and bottom, if you're listening to this podcast, you're not the top. Like, you're not the top. You're, if you don't make $1 billion a year, you're not the top. The top, the people we're talking about, the control, are a different level.
1%, yeah, that's going to be
1% is what, $300 million a year?
No. No, per year? No, that's income would be more like $3 million a year. Your wealth may be much higher than that, but and even that seems a bit large. I think it may be even lower than $1 million. Maybe even closer to like $500,000 a year, but yeah. But let's say that there was an issue that was important to you and important to a whole lot of people, like, for example, net neutrality. And let's say that everyone decided that they were going to pitch in $100 to try to influence, you know, in terms of a lobbyist, a team of lobbyists to try to influence the decision-making policy of lawmakers. You know, you started contributing to certain people's campaigns. Like, everyone put that much in there.
Yeah.
That amount of money would still be overwhelmed by the amount of money at play with regard to the businesses that are head of these industries.
Right. You just can't do it.
You simply cannot compete there. You just, even if everyone were energized, even if everyone were willing to spend that money, you still could be swamped.
That's depressing.
And that's just the numbers.
Yeah.
That's just
sure.
Looking at what piles of money are available.
All right, let's talk about something else depressing, shall we?
Sure.
You want to talk about state of Nazi hunting? What's that?
This I thought was rather interesting. Specifically, right now we see videos on a all too regular basis of neo-Nazis going through particular areas, sometimes carrying tiki torches, sometimes, you know, carrying various flags, symbols, stuff like that. And we are used to seeing symbols like you know, a Confederate flag along with this group, you know, or the Gadsden flag, the Don't Tread on Me. But there are a lot of symbols out there that people just aren't familiar with on a day-to-day basis that kind of go under the radar because they're not white supremacists. They don't necessarily hang out intimately with white supremacists with regard to the
lore.
They don't
necessarily self-identify
right
as a white supremacist.
Well, that and you, like, who spends a whole lot of time figuring out all the various symbols that someone uses. It's much the same with any group. You have your own little, you have your own language, you have your own, you know, mascots, whatnot.
You and I kind of know ASCII enough to use the letters to talk about the characters. Yeah.
And in this case, someone has taken an AI to look at videos and identify white supremacist symbols from those videos to then be able to match up and go like, hey, look, this is – so in the sea of videos, be able to analyze them and be able to identify
– what kind of symbols are we talking about? Like paraphernalia, like badges and shirts and things like that? Printed symbology? Like intentional marketing pieces?
Yes. Okay. I'm trying to think of one of them, like the – the Black Sun is one of them. And I'm sure when I describe that, you have no idea what that looks like.
I don't know what that is.
And if you look at the video, you'd go, oh, it's an interesting symbol. I would have no idea that that was a white supremacist symbol. And yet it is. And so being able to scan through videos programmatically to be able to find this in these symbols, to be able to identify where they're popping up without having to, you know, troll the forums, without having to have individual people try to, you know, hunt it down, which is a, you know, Sisyphean task.
Right.
Then that's a win. It's something that I'm really impressed with the work that's gone into this thus far. So far, the work hasn't been open source, but you can see a sample of what's going on with it right now.
I'm curious about the symbols at the same time. You know, it's funny. When I start looking at this kind of stuff, I always question whether I want to have my search history all embedded into looking up symbolism for neo-Nazis.
No, I don't mean that. I mean it's more along the lines of where watching shifting patterns, because, for example, Reddit had several subreddits that were shut down because they were neo-Nazis. And so they would migrate someplace else. It is useful to be able to see videos that are getting posted, ones that are getting popular, and being able to identify where these populations are going to be able to engage them.
Right. So CNN Money has a system for the U.S. to say what the annual household income is and what percent you are. So you can do the scale thing. And I don't know what this data is based off of, because, of course, it's tricky to know that. But, you know, CNN Money's probably got relatively accurate information. So I'm going to roll this thing up until it says 1%. And it gets 1% at $440,000 a year as a salary.
That makes...
Now, that is similar to another I was looking at earlier, another one just a few minutes ago. But that data was based off of a 2014 census or information from 2014. So that's probably 2014 money data. But $440,000 a year gets you into the 1%.
Right.
And, of course, that's going to be based up differently on states and all of that, right, I would assume. Because
right. And then the 1/10 of 1%, that's a tenfold jump up from there.
Right.
And the 1/100 of 1%, then you really start getting into astronomical numbers. The curve gets very steep very quickly.
And also, these are all about, you know, there's also age brackets. If you look at people, you know, at 25 years of age, the figure is down at, you know, 120,000 to get the 1%, because, of course, your age definitely affects your income. Interesting. Pokemon Go, huh? Did you ever play Pokemon Go?
I did not.
Why not? Do you ever play games?
I do, although I avoid them nowadays.
Yeah, I do too. Though I recently was kind of addicted to one.
I don't have enough time.
I was recently doing one called 2048. Which
yes. One sucked me in too.
Yeah, me too. Look for 2048. It's a mobile game. It's kind of fun. It's
that math. Way you can waste a whole bunch of your time too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I found that I fixate on games, and then I don't have time for other aspects of my life.
So you didn't play Pokemon Go, but you got a story about Pokemon Go.
Yes. Pokemon Go, where people may have been familiar with a bunch of people looking down at their phones as they're walking.
Into traffic?
Yeah. Yeah, or just walking through a park.
I played with my whole family. It was really fun. We went on a big hike.
Yeah. It has been found that Pokemon Go, just by itself, led to an increase in traffic deaths, accidents.
I believe that.
And a non-trivial number, like a 26.5% relative increase.
You mean that you were 25.6% more likely to have an accident if you played Pokemon Go?
26.5% more likely, yeah.
Okay.
Or rather, you are that much more likely to have been in an accident.
Because of that.
Because of Pokemon Go, whether the player of the Pokemon Go or as someone who was unlucky enough to cross paths with someone driving while playing Pokemon Go.
It's interesting when you talk about percentages of increased probability, because, of course, that's based off of the base probability. So if you have a 0.4% chance of doing something, then a 25% increase is, you know, going to be based off that.
Unfortunately, traffic accidents are not sufficiently rare where
it seems like that's a pretty large increase at some level.
And this was wherever there might be a Pokestop.
Right. So more deaths around Pokestops.
Yeah, so within 100 meters of a Pokestop, that's where they saw the 26.5% increase. So it was pretty clearly correlated.
Oh, well, but wait a second. If it was only around the Pokestops that had a higher increase, maybe it wasn't 26% increase of all accidents. It was just in that area.
No, that's what I mean. It was only in those areas.
Okay, so that's not an increase of all accidents. That's only an increase
Right. I'm sorry. I did not mean to say that. But
of course, there was a lot of Pokestops. There's a lot of them.
Yeah. And they became hotspots for accidents.
Sure.
So that means it suggests more than 145,000 additional crashes.
Okay.
29,000 additional injuries and 250 additional deaths.
That seems like a lot.
Specifically because of playing the game.
Okay. That does seem like a lot. Keep in mind, though, that we had more people outside and active. So there's just higher density of people outside because of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because a lot of the people that were playing those types of games aren't people that would go out all the time, right?
It, mm-hmm.
Potentially, you had people that went outside more. If you have higher percentage of people outside, especially in certain areas, you're going to have higher accidents. Whether the game existed or not, if you just sent 40% more people outside every day, you'd have more accidents.
Right. But these are vehicular accidents.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying that the causation does not necessarily mean because of the game's innate lack of attention. It's just density, potentially. I'm sure that it's also correlates because of lack of attention. But additionally, you have people that were socializing that they hadn't before and exercising that they hadn't before. So you also potentially had a benefit to people's health from exercising. And you also had a benefit for people's social interactions because, you know, they went out in the world. People had babies because of this game that wouldn't have had babies without. Whether it was that many, I don't know. So the base level of change in society might have been a beneficial one.
I find that highly unlikely.
Well, how many deaths do you say?
250. The game wasn't out for that long.
That's not that many babies. That's only 250 babies. I'm not actually that into the game. It was fun with my family. We got an accident and we stopped playing. No, I'm just kidding. You want to talk about Pixel 2 getting better after release? That's an amazing story.
Yeah. Pixel 2, the Android phone, the new flagship phone from Google.
Which, by the way, if you're going to get an Android phone, that's the one you're going to get, right? It's like awesome, or is it really expensive?
I don't know. It's awesome, but there are also awesome Samsung and LG phones. So I don't know. Like, I'm an iPhone person because I don't like the malware and the security vulnerabilities associated with the Android ecosystem. But
dude, you remember how we used to have a balanced radio show, and then now you and I just both use friggin' iPhones. We're both using Apple laptops.
Yeah.
Go on.
But at the same time, these Google phones have what's called a visual core, which is
a GPU,
a coprocessor.
Okay.
And
is it a graphics coprocessor? Or is it
a logic coprocessor? So okay. It's I mean, that difference between a graphics coprocessor and a standard processor are becoming blurred because you're not necessarily using it for graphics. You're using it for heavy duty computation that could be graphics or AI. You know,
yeah, it's just massive parallel processing on board.
Yeah,
like that's what it really is. It's funny that we used to call them graphics coprocessors. We still do, and yet what they can do is everything you want it to do. Like the reason why we have machine learning and phones now.
We used to call
them
numeric coprocessors back in the day until they got rolled into the 486. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
The thing is that this chip that was on all the phones that were shipped didn't do anything.
What?
It could do something, but it would because the software to run it wasn't ready yet. So you had this piece of hardware that was just sitting there, you know, generating some heat. Not a lot of heat because it wasn't being used actively, but you know.
And I'm assuming that the operating system supports it.
So now a developer preview of Android 8.1 is now using it again. And one of the things about this chip is that it's able to do some tasks to make things go faster in the short term, which is really good for, especially for a specific purpose. Dedicated purposes, you can lower the power consumption. One, you have these code paths that are made for a particular algorithm. So that's going to be much more efficient than a general purpose processor where you're trying to get it to do a variety of tasks. In addition to that, if you can have a problem get done very quickly and then go to sleep, you're saving power.
Yeah.
As opposed to having that chip that's slower run longer. And that's what's happening here.
Very cool.
So you have, you know, 8 image processing units, 512 arithmetic logic units. It's like general purpose GPU, except it's not really graphics
anymore. And I love that you like got a phone. If you bought the phone, you got it.
Yeah.
And then it got better.
Right.
That's rare.
I mean, you'll get improvements in software, like you know, bug fixes, or maybe they'll make
but you don't get extra processing
right,
speed.
Exactly. That was what made this story kind of interesting. Wanted to bring
Miles, Do you know that GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and he's used with permission of GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0? You can use it any way you'd like. Just give us credit.
I did not know that.
Did you know that the theme song is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music? And did you know that today's show is Facebook Isn't Neutral About Pokemon Nazis? That title is by Greg Merkley, our support geek in Canada. Miles Elam, thank you so much for joining me today on GeekSpeak.
Always a pleasure.
I'm Lyle Troxell, and I would love to say I will see you next week. However, we are taking a December hiatus. We will be back for season 18 in 2018. I just decided that this month it's been pretty busy for me, and I'm just going to take some time. But I will produce an episode every week that will be fun to listen to. So there you go. But we've got a couple more stories since we're both here, and we're going to take some time off. The Google Fiber one?
So a judge has ruled against Google Fiber getting onto utility poles.
Why?
Existing ones. Because the poles are owned by AT&T. And that in and of itself would seem straightforward, right? They paid for the poles, so why should they have to have someone else use them? The thing is,
they didn't pay for the poles.
For decades, we have been... And when I say we, not just customers of AT&T, but taxpayers in a particular area, those funds have been going to telecom providers to make the infrastructure that they use today. And in many cases, there have been promises made by those providers to say, we're going to give you this much money, then we want this much out of it. Like we want fiber laid, or we want broadband speeds to go up by this amount. And time and again, that money was taken, but the promises were not kept.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is kind of a kick in the teeth for then AT&T to file a lawsuit in Tennessee where Google Fiber is trying to roll out to say, you're not allowed to use these poles, which by and large are a community resource. And for the citizens there, because of
why doesn't citizenship just take it by eminent domain?
Have you seen who's president? Yeah.
Well, so here's the point, though: the Republican Party, the Grand Old Party, is all for competition, right? So their goal is to have more competition.
Well,
why not just? I mean, I guess you would be taking the resources of a company potentially. If that's the argument.
I am critical of the GOP, although there are several GOP lawmakers that I say are fighting the good fight, and there are several Democratic lawmakers that I go, like, wow, aren't you a turd? This is very much along the lines of what I was talking about earlier, the Princeton study showing that we're an oligopoly. It's like the money is going that way, so that's the way the laws are right. being made.
From a competition perspective, the idea that we, by incentives in the community, has subsidized this one company to own resources to serve us, that whole idea is very un-Republican Party aspect, right? You don't do that kind of thing. You don't
absolutely do. There's no end of precedent of giving money, giving subsidies to a company that is already profitable.
Oh, it's so ridiculous.
There is actually a term for it, crony capitalism.
The benefit of capitalism would hit the public so much more if there was real competition in telcos.
Like, it's
an obvious thing.
There's the argument of what is real competition, you know, in scare quotes. Because right now we're talking about we don't want regulation. Well, this is a regulation. It's just not in the public's favor.
Right. Miles, one argument to say is that no, AT&T owns those telephone poles. So it's their property. That's why, you know, no one else can use it. That argument is relatively cogent. The issue has to do with how do you incentivize competition, right? That's a monopoly situation. The existence of those poles is a monopolistic situation.
Except that when you talk about like AT&T owns those poles, why do they own those poles?
No, I get that. That's another argument, right? That's another question about like where did they come from, what resources, what arguments, what promises were made to get those
right,
resources.
But you're asking about a hypothetical to say, let's look at that last quarter mile without looking at the previous 5 miles of regulations that mm-hmm. have taken place to make that last bit possible. I kind of reject the argument to say, is this that last pit in isolation justifiable along those lines without looking at the history.
I guess I'm just saying there's two issues here.
Mm-hmm.
One is that we have a monopoly in telcos, right?
Regional
monopolies. That just exists. That's a reality. We also have the problem that we helped create them for potentially public good. Mm-hmm. That was the reason that we helped produce them, subsidize their infrastructure and growth, because no one else would. It was too much of an outlay for a company. So one way to think about that is, well, let's just do it again. Google wants to come in. Okay, let's just subsidize Google too. And then Google will own some polls too. And then we'll have more crowd. Like, it's a ridiculous way of doing it, right? Mm-hmm. The other way to do it is to say, you are required to share that resource because we invested in it. And either you provide this kind of service level within this period of time, or other companies are going to come in and do it. It seems to me it's a hard argument to go against. The only body that would be up against that argument are AT&T and the owners of AT&T. And that's where that whole statement comes in of saying the people with the big money actually win.
And the folks that have the ideological slogans of, we don't want big government interfering with the free market, which...
But we already did. We had to compensate for it.
That's what I mean, though. This is the inoculation against that quick talking point that requires the suspension of critical thought.
Right.
Because this doesn't just affect Google Fiber. This also affects... and this comes in with the FCC again, which is they will also be looking at curtailing the ability to for municipal broadband to come into play. Municipal being, you're in an area, you can only get one provider, they're not providing, you know, or you can't get any providers, and you're like, well, we asked AT&T to come in, we asked Comcast to come in, and they didn't because they said it wasn't worth it. So we took a vote, and we pulled our money together, and we started laying fiber and building up our infrastructure. And at the last minute, before we're about to turn it on, the companies then file a lawsuit saying that, no, you can't do this because that is government competing with the private market, that we didn't know there was a market there before.
Man, I'm just a little depressed about all this stuff. The SEC rules coming in, this kind of stuff it's sad. All right, I got two more stories, so let's go ahead and get the MIT-Harvard story.
So just in case you were worried about machines taking over, MIT and Harvard have teamed up to build robotic muscles that can lift 1,000 times their own weight.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So the weight of an object, and then how much can they pull up relative to the weight? Because if you make a crane, that crane weighs a certain amount. So the amount that it can lift relative to its weight becomes important. A really big crane, really heavy, and it can lift more. A small crane, a toy crane, doesn't weigh very much, but can't lift as much. So that weight to lift ratio is very important.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, they have deceptively simple looking. They look kind of like origami, actually. And they send either liquid or air, so back and forth. So it's hydraulic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
They create a vacuum inside the skin to make it release.
Cool. So it's a pneumatic thing.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of robots, our last story for today is actually from like 2 weeks ago, but we didn't talk about it. We normally talk about, increases in robot qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen what Boston Dynamics Atlas robot is now doing? Atlas is the humanoid robot, the bipedal humanoid robot.
Yes, and I've seen the backflipping robot.
Yes.
Yes. And I've also seen the
jumping. It's jumping up and down on platforms and stuff, and then it does a full foot. It's a backflip off a platform, landing on its feet.
And I've seen the comments also from people online talking about it, going, okay, look, if a robot is chasing me during the apocalypse, and as it's chasing me, jumping over these berms, it decides to stop chasing me and do a backflip like this, I'm just going to curl up and die and wait for the end.
Yeah, so Elon Musk's tweet about this post was, and I'll just quote him, "This is nothing. In a few years, that bot will move so fast, you'll need a strobe light to see it. Sweet dreams." I mean, that's the point, is that what it's doing right now at the speeds it's doing right now is just because it's learning.
Yeah.
It won't... It,
And based upon our own expectations, the expectations of the people who are building it.
Right. But it's just a matter of time. So this is a robot that already can do better than you and I can do. I mean, I could do a backflip, but I'd hurt myself first. Right? This thing is doing backflips now. It will never get worse at backflips, right?
Right.
And of course, this is just one build of this. And so the next version will do it better. And it will do it faster.
And they'll be jumping around with muscles that are noticeably
much stronger than us,
yeah.
And lighter. So it's just, it's cool and amazing, all that. But also, we're going to slowly just be replaced. See you in January.
Hopefully.